Woo-hoo Hype, not your ordinary wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey sort of podcast.
Welcome, everybody, back to our latest episode of Woo-hoo Hype. We are really excited to discuss the penultimate episode of Doctor Who Season 7, which is the Neil Gaiman episode, Nightmare in Silver. Cannot wait to get into this. So before we do, just a quick recap on how you can get in touch with us. You can send us an email at whohype@hypeable.com. You can send us a tweet at whohype. Or you can post a comment over on hypeable.com in any of the Doctor Who posts. That's hypable.com. You know, considering we're talking Neil Gaiman here, I have a feeling we're going to be talking for a while. So before we get into all the little intricacies here, let's go with our thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways reaction to the episode. Jen, why don't I kick it off with you? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways.
I give it a thumbs up. I liked it. I thought it was better than the other ones we had this season. And I loved the writing of it, and because it's more character driven, I feel, this episode. And I love that when we get more into the characters and kind of who they are and who they're becoming and what makes the Doctor tick with Clara, because clearly there's something there. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I loved the Cyber Doctor and the regular Doctor bits together. I thought those were really, really well done.
Kyle, how about you? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways.
I actually have to say it was a thumbs down towards a sideways. And no, it's not the same as a thumbs sideways, there's a thumbs down. Because I didn't like it really all that much, but I thought it was okay. But it was mostly just because I was expecting a lot, I think. And if I watched it again, maybe I'd be more satisfied. But I was expecting a couple of different things to happen, and none of them happened, which made me really irritated.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Natalie, coming over your way. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways.
It was a thumbs up for me, but it wasn't what I expected. I will say that. It was a thumbs up as a general Doctor Who episode, but it wasn't actually what I was expecting this episode to be like. I did like it better than some of the other ones we've had this season. As I said, a lot of the episodes we've had this season so far have been very average to me. Like, they haven't really been, like, hitting hard, and I'm wondering if that's all building up to something really extreme at the end of the season rather than big things throughout the season. But I really liked all the character stuff in this one. The Cybermen aren't my favorite villains, but it was interesting. So yeah, I liked it as an episode.
I'm going to join you guys all on the, well, not all. I'm going to join the three of you on a thumbs up, but I still have the same problem I had with last week's episode. Is I loved it except for the kids. That's my one reservation about this. I'm good with it up until the kids. I've got some real serious problems with the kids that definitely echo what I brought up last week, but I think we'll get into that as we go along. Mm-hmm. So why don't we talk about some quotes here? This one, again, I think we had some quotable quotes going on.
Definitely. My favorite quote was when Clara said, "I trust the Doctor." And then she gets asked, "So you think he knows what he's doing?" And then she's like, "I want to go that far." It was great.
It's so typical, too. You're right. I love that. Natalie, how about you?
One moment I really liked was when Clara comes back to her sort of cadets that she's managing and is sort of like got, you know, one gun, five hand pulses and a big bomb to destroy the planet that doesn't work anymore. And they're like, "Oh, why not?" And she's like, "Oh, trigger's broken." And the little guy who was in charge of the all of the paperwork is like, "But you signed for that." And that to me was that's a real Neil Gaiman moment. Like, he always has things in a lot of the things that he writes that are like funny focus on technicalities. Like, even in the weirdest situations, there's going to be some weird technicality process I really laughed at that. But I also liked a bit where they get beamed up to the ship at the end and the Doctor's kind of sulkily like, "Nice ship, bit big, not blue enough," kind of thing. I really loved that.
I really liked the one where he was Cyber Doctor pretending to be Doctor and he's like, "Clara, I suppose I'm the only one who knows how I feel about you right now." And he goes on to say, "She's funny and she's pretty and all this other stuff." And then she smacks him and he's like, "That really hurt. How did you know that it was him?" And she's like, "Because even if it was true," which it obviously is not, "I know you'd rather die than say it." So I thought that was really funny that she knows him well enough to know that there could be something there, but he's never going to admit it even if there is.
The ones that I really loved were when he was the cyber doctor and the shout-outs. We've had some cowboys in there. And then the Alan Z. I liked the references to David Tennant's doctor coming through. I thought those were really just kind of fun to have that. And he sort of like spun how he did it. But the other thing that I thought was interesting was at the very end, as Clara's walking out the ship, and he goes, and she's a mystery, wrapped in an enigma, in a short skirt. And I was like, hello, Winston Churchill describing the Soviet Union. I'm like, oh my God, that is like almost verbatim, minus the short skirt fit, obviously. But that's a classic quote on how Winston Churchill described the Soviet Union as a enigma wrapped in a mystery. And I'm like, what? I don't know. That bugged me. I did not like that quote. I was like, not clever enough. I just didn't like that one at all. All right. Why don't we start talking about the episode in general? So this is Neil Gaiman's second time out with a Doctor Who episode. The previous one being The Doctor's Wife, when we had Idris and the Doctor was getting to actually talk to the TARDIS for the first time. So do we like this one better, or did we like The Doctor's Wife better? And I'm sure Neil Gaiman hates the fact that everyone's going to compare them, because he's even said as much in a couple interviews, but I don't think we can avoid this. So who wants to jump in? Which one do we like better?
The Doctor's Wife.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
I don't even know if that's a question. I mean, really? Does anyone like this one better?
No. I mean, okay. I think that it's very difficult to compare the two, because this is more of a standard Doctor Who episode, a very, you know, a good one, but a standard sort of episode in the series, whereas The Doctor's Wife was kind of a, like a one-off landmark event. Like, nothing happened to the Doctor in this episode that was like a big life-changing, or I mean that we know of, life-changing thing. I mean, I don't, you know, obviously he got kind of made into a Cyberman, which is sort of a big deal, but any writer could have done that, whereas I think Neil Gaiman was the only person who could have done that, The Doctor's Wife. And I know that with this episode, he had more instructions. With The Doctor's Wife, he was just told, write whatever you want, and you have to include this one little thing that the only water in the forest is the river to, you know, to continue on with the plot. And he had absolutely free reign over what he wanted to make the Doctor to do, whereas this episode he had a bit more direction. It was like, we want you to do an episode about the Cyberman, blah, blah. Like, so I think it's very difficult, because one was kind of, The Doctor's Wife was more of an original creation, whereas this, he was sort of just a hired gun putting his own touch on a plot that they came up with.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that what you said, Natalie, like a hired gun with a plot that they kind of said, do this, do this, do this, that you can see elements of where Neil Gaiman, I feel, is at his best. Like the whole dialogue that the Doctor has with himself, that is phenomenal Neil Gaiman. The whole conversation that Clara has with Porridge is beautiful Neil Gaiman. But then we get these moments, I feel like, where the kids come in and he's inherited them, and he doesn't know what the characterization is or the continuity of these kids are. He's just told, you know, here they are. This is a little background on them. Go. You know, it's hard for him to get a vibe on what's going on there exactly. Whereas he knows Matt Smith, and he knows how he can write for Matt Smith because he's had so many seasons of seeing him in action. I thought the Clara and Porridge thing actually came out rather well, but otherwise it's kind of hard to tell where you're going with something. So that's interesting. Why don't we talk about the Cybermen here? Because this is obviously what he was hired to do. The email that apparently tempted him to take part was Stephen Moffat sent Neil Gaiman an email, and in the email it said, would you like to try to make the Cybermen scary again? Now, I have to tell you, that would tempt, I think, anybody who's a fan of Doctor Who, who's a writer, you know, make the Cybermen scary. I personally think he did a really good job with it. I think the thing that I liked the best is that we had these partial conversions with that webbing over their face. And you just know everyone's going to cosplay with that this summer at Comic-Con. Like, you know, I'm going to see so many people with that on their faces. But I think it was kind of brilliant because we still saw facial reaction. I think that's what the problem is with the Cybermen, is that, you know, you put the metal head on and there goes facial expression, or even body stance. You know, even when they did the bit with Craig and you could still see his head, but the rest of him was in the suit. Like, I think this was a really good way that Neil Gaiman wrote it. What do you guys think?
I love the upgrades, personally. I think it made them really cool, and I liked how shiny they were and pretty, and they're just pretty men. Pretty rope. Wow. No. Goodness.
There's a new ship.
It's called Kyle and Cybermen and Pretty Cybermen coming up. There's a fanfic in the works there somewhere.
But yes, I liked it.
Now, here's the other thing, too, because we've had so many different versions of the Cybermen. And if you look back into the classic Who days, I mean, you can just tell they're on a budget and they're just, it really looks like some fifth grader's Halloween costume cutout that went horribly wrong, like the first incarnation of them. But they've had a couple little offshoots. Like, we've had the Cyber Mats, and they've had a couple different versions. The most recent version of the Cyber Mats was with that Craig episode, Closing Time. Now we had the Cyber Mites, those little, like, little swirly buggy things. I thought those were pretty clever. Did you guys like the concept of the Cyber Mite?
I'm not scared of bugs, but I don't like parasite-y things, and they seemed very, like, ew and gross. It was just interesting to me that they were kind of... It sort of confused me as to how much control they had, whether they were just, like, for surveillance or whether they were sort of the brain power, like, reactivating the Cybermen, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, they were creepy. I mean, just the fact that they would, like, sort of crawl up... Like, the point where they crawled up, like, Matt Smith's shirt and everything, I was like, ew! I was like, yeah, that was, it had that parasitical, like, are they absorbing into the skin? What are they doing? Yeah, like, I was waiting for one kind of, like, to crawl up his nose. I know that's, like, really disgusting, but that's like, horror film trope.
Even when they sort of came out of the eyes of the Cyberman itself, like, the Cyberman, hollow Cyberman thing, that was really gross. The thing that interested me about the Cybermen in general, like the upgrade-y kind of thing, was actually more the amount of personality that they seemed to have. Like, I didn't think the Cybermen had any personality or sort of independent thought, if you know what I mean. I didn't. But when, for example, Matt, you know, when the Doctor was half Cyberplanet, when they had those things on their face, it was like still their own personalities. So I didn't really understand how that worked, if you know what I mean. Like, it was still their own, the personality of the person who they'd taken over, but using their own sort of brain power. So how much personality or independent thought does a Cyberman have?
Yeah, I took it only because, like, the partial conversions, like, it still had part of that person in there is how I was taking it. I mean, it had a bigger personality than I thought it would. Before, it was just very delete, delete, delete.
Is the Cyber Planner a new thing or an old thing?
It's an old thing.
Okay.
Because I put a link.
Is it in the new reboot series?
No.
Okay.
No.
But the way that it's been used here is completely different to how it was used before.
I feel like they didn't explain that well enough, at least for me, who didn't watch Classic Who. I'm like, I was a little confused as to what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of implied in that you can figure, okay, if they're all operating the very, very same, you know, and like I said, they have that, up until now, they've been like, delete, delete, delete.
Robots. Like, yeah. You know, robots. Yeah.
Yeah, like there had to be something kind of controlling it. Like I said, the hive mind. So this was sort of like, yeah, like him tapping into the source code, which I guess, I mean, you kind of maybe thought something was there, like controlling everything.
They showed the little mites and like watching them. And I'm like, who's watching them? I don't understand this.
Yeah.
And then he talked to the Cyber Planner. And I'm like, who the hell is the Cyber Planner? Like,
I was surprised that any aspect of the Cybermen in general had conscious thought. I thought they were robots, not creatures, if you know what I mean. I didn't think that, like, even though it was, you know, sort of half the Doctor's personality, like, obviously he had his full self and then he had his, you know, Mr. Clever self or whatever. Even the fact that he was being like, oh, that's a boring name, I could come up with better names. It was like, whose personality is that? Like, I don't understand. Like, when he was the Cyber Planner, like, why it had personality. I didn't understand that at all.
Here's another thing. It's sort of like an offshoot of this. They knew who he was, right?
They said, oh, it's a bit hard to track you down because you've been deleting yourself from history, which tied it back into that first episode, Asylum of the Daleks, when Clara allegedly started deleting him, or maybe he did it himself. Well, right. But he seemed to go along with the fact that he'd done it himself, so maybe there's something we don't know there.
So did they know he was the doctor because then they got into his mind and that's how they figured out he was the doctor? Or did they figure out he was the doctor before? Because that was my question. Okay.
So I think only when they got in. I think only when they got in.
The other thing they said, though, is because you're leaving holes everywhere, we can go back and trace you through all the holes you left and find out who you are.
Okay. So it's via the Swiss cheese and then getting in there into his brain and putting the two together. I was going, whoa, they know who he is. Like, that was sort of a first. Interesting. The other aspect we have this time out, which is kind of different, we haven't seen this in a while, but it is something we have seen before, which is the idea of the doctor as a threat himself. Like, the doctor having been taken over and not being in full control of who he is and being a threat to the people around him. How did we like how this was executed this time?
I think it was executed beautifully. I think Matt Smith did a fantastic job with acting as if he's torn apart by two different things. And I love the idea of him battling himself inside his head. I loved seeing it. The fact that you can see his mind and see him talking to the Cyber Planner with like all the Gallifreyan stuff in the background was amazing.
The stakes of like a universe depending on the chess game, that's very Neil Gaiman.
I also thought on just a level of scary, it was much scarier than, say, the last time I remember this happening was with David Tennant in Rose Tyler when he's in that spacesuit episode with like the devil, the fire burn with me thing. I thought this was much scarier than that, definitely, because I felt like you didn't always know when the doctor was in control and how much control he had and would he break out of that suit. Let's go on to our next bit, which is the kids, which I think is an area that we all kind of, in one way or another, had sort of a universal problem with. I had brought up last week when we were talking that, okay, so the kids figured out who Clara was, which I still don't quite understand how they put all those pieces together unless the great intelligence helped them out with it. And then we have the doctor and Clara taking them on a day out, and the doctor goes to this space amusement park with them. So again, I'm having problems with this just because that TARDIS is so good at getting them where and when they're intending. Like, why would you take a bunch of like young kids, not like 19-year-olds or 18-year-olds? These are clearly, you know, this Artie, I think, is clearly not a teenager yet. And, you know, Angie is certainly not what I would call a mature teenager. I wanted to, like, throttle her and go, get over yourself. I mean, she's like a snotty little teenager. So why would you take these two kids into the TARDIS, you know, to begin with, just on a danger factor? And when you land on this planet and you realize now that it is not where you thought you were going to be, why would you have stayed? Like, I just had a huge problem.
It was just particularly annoying when they just started off the episode with the kids on the moon or whatever. And I'm like, what? You don't even get to see, one, them talking to Clara about the whole thing, two, talking to the doctor about the whole thing. And you're just like, okay. I was really expecting some sort of continuity between, like, the house scene and then the doctor finding out the kids want to go somewhere. And then that just cut off. And I'm like, well, that was just annoying. And I was waiting for him to be like, oh, stay safe, like, watching them like a hawk. And then he leaves them in the room alone. I'm like, where's everyone else going?
Yeah.
Yes!
You're going to let these two kids sleep in this room with the Cybermen?
Why don't you go put them on the TARDIS? It's not like he doesn't have 5 million beds in there. The fact that he didn't put the kids in the TARDIS to have their nap hammered home for me how underutilized the TARDIS is as like a rescue thing or a safety thing quite often.
Yeah. I mean, even if he didn't want to involve extra people, I totally agree, Kyle. Like, why in the hell did you not lock them up in the TARDIS? I mean, first of all, the whole bit about don't wander off. Again, they're not adults. They are kids. I mean, I get it when he's traveling with somebody like Mickey, who's an adult, and you go, don't wander off. Like, I could see locking him up in the TARDIS would be rather insulting. And if you're an adult and you decide to wander anyway, you know what? You're an adult, your own damn fault. But these are kids. Freaking lock them up in the TARDIS. I couldn't agree with you more. Here's the other one too. I had a huge problem with the characterization of Angie. I mean, I know she's being this really obnoxious teenager, you know, just she's just bitchy. And I mean, I know her mother died recently, so maybe we need to cut her a break there. But still, she was just in full out, like, caricature, obnoxious mode. And, like, not for nothing, you went on the spacecraft. Like, I don't think you would be that, like, oh my God, is that all, if you got on a spacecraft? Like, even if the other planet was run down, I have a feeling you still would be like, oh my gosh, let's look at this. Wow, this is interesting. Like, I don't know. I had a problem with that. Did anybody else have a problem with Angie's characterization?
Yeah, she was over the top awful. Like, really. Yeah, just everything was negative. And I know that some teenagers are like that, or some early teenagers, but it's like she went out of her way to be awful. And she seemed to have so much resentment for Clara as well. And that's something I didn't really understand, because in the first glimpse we got of her, like back in the Clara's first episode, like this Clara's first episode, she didn't really seem to be like, she kind of, they had, it looked like they had a good relationship. Like, sort of, Angie said something casually, like, you know, about the computer, and, you know, kind of like, you're not my mum, but like as a joke. And Clara said, I'm not trying to be, kind of thing. And it seemed more friendly. And in this, she was just horrible. Like, really, to the point where I'm not sure if kids are really that bad. Like, and
they're that bad. I work with them on the daily basis.
Really?
Yes,
God,
they're called teenagers.
I want to know how realistic this child is.
If she's as angry about the mom thing as I think she is, because she repeatedly says, you're not my mom, Clara's not my mom, like, repeatedly. Like, we've heard that at least 4 or 5 times out of that girl's mouth, and we've only seen her on screen, you know, a handful of times. So clearly there's something to that line of, you're not my mom. But yeah, I mean, while she is, yes, horrid, there are teenagers who are that way. So it's not, I mean, yes, it's dramatic on TV, like in this scene, because we don't have any backstory to it. We just see it. So I think that's what's really hard about her characterization, is that we don't see where she's coming from, because like you said, prior, she wasn't that bad. She was just kind of like, eh, whatever. But now in this one, she's like, I mean, she's just mean. And we don't know why. I mean, she got what she wanted. She called Clara out on, you know, traveling through time with the doctor, or her boyfriend, as she called him. And then they finally agree to take her somewhere. They go, and she just isn't very nice about it. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to us, because we don't have, like, the background information on Angie. So it makes it really tricky. But yeah, there are kids who behave that way.
I feel like Artie, we know a little bit more about him. Like, we know he likes chess. We know he likes to read. Not that we have a lot more to go on, but we've got something. Other than Angie was on the internet and she likes hanging out at her friend Nina's house, it's like, where else are we going to go with this? Like, we got nothing. And I think that's what really made her very two-dimensional or one-dimensional. And I feel like Neil Gaiman got stuck there. Like, he was given, I mean, he obviously had no idea how the kids were developed or not developed prior to this episode. I feel like he got told, you have to include these kids, but he didn't have any kind of concept as to their prior development. So they stick out as something that Neil Gaiman got stuck with, and he didn't know quite how to deal with it.
It's not as if Neil Gaiman can't write children. His new book, Ocean at the End of the Lane, follows a kid who's about 7, doesn't just make the child into some caricature. It could be, I know with the Doctor's Wife, his original writing of that episode was for the 10th Doctor, and then his episode got moved, and he originally was going to be in the first season, so it was just the Doctor and Amy, and then the final edition actually had the Doctor, Amy, and Rory, so he had to do a rewrite to include Rory. And I'm wondering if maybe he had to do a really late rewrite that included these kids and that they weren't originally meant to be there.
I feel like one scene where, like, Angie would be, like, sitting alone, thinking about her mom, being like, I wish my mom was here, would have made her completely more acceptable. I feel like, look, she's just lashing out, she misses her mom. Like, oh, my mom used to take me to theme parks all the time, and this just really reminds me of her, and that's why she's, like, hating everyone. Like, I feel like if you took out one extra scene and replaced it with just the kids, it would not only make Angie more acceptable and believable as a character, but it would also make just the kids less two-dimensional, and we'd learn more about them. And it's also one of the reasons that I hated this episode.
So next week we are going to wrap up. But here's the thing. I certainly did not get the impression that these two kids are going to, in any capacity,
be in the finale.
So I'm having a hard time seeing why their major introduction was the penultimate episode, and we didn't get more of a flavor of them the whole way through. I mean, if they are supposed to be critical in everything, and or, you know, or why didn't we just get rid of them? Like, I feel like that's a story arc problem, that those kids should have been more present the whole way through the season, and then I could be fine with them being totally dropped in the finale. So do we pick up with them in the 50th? Do we pick up with them in the season that follows?
The only explanation I have is that they wanted it to be on a fun park for reasons, and that it would just be silly for the Doctor and Clara to go to a fun park together because they're adults. But, I mean, it could have been cute being like the Doctor like, ooh, Spacey Zoomy, and Clara's like, no. And he's like, no, Spacey Zoomy. Like, you know, it could have been, it could have worked with just him, them two, even if they wanted to set it in the same place. Like, the whole thing just seemed like a bit odd. Like, they were going to this space, you know, theme park planet because they had the kids. Obviously, they showed up at the wrong time after it was all closed. And that was the reason that the kids were there. And if, it, you know, there weren't kids, it might have been set somewhere different. That's the only thing I can think of. But it seemed like a real one-off, like, we're taking the kids for a day and then it's just not going to be a thing.
I could totally imagine that conversation between Moffat and, and Neil and being like, so I want you to put this on a theme park planet because I'm going to have these two kids that I've never really interacted with before. And Neil Gaiman is like, why? And he's like, reasons. That's it.
Reasons. Yeah. So here's our next kind of thing that comes up in the episode. So the Doctor realizes something's wrong. You know, he knows he wants to investigate the bugs, and okay, no problem. And he puts Clara in charge and says, whatever you do, don't allow them to blow up the planet. So, okay, I guess you could tell, you know, given there's that whole swath of space that's obliterated. Yeah, all right. So obviously he knows things could go badly here. But now he puts Clara in charge, who suddenly, now I know she is pretty resourceful and everything.
No, I
but it's
I
like know. It's like another whole level of Clara leading the troops, and I'm like, it was actually what started going through my brain was the song Charles in Charge, only it was like Clara in Charge. Oh, I mean, God. She did it effectively, but it was, I was like, hello, Mary Sue, Clara. Did you guys have a little problem with the level of which she was commanding the troops?
It almost seemed like something was working through her. And it made me wonder if it, again, was something to do with, like, tapping into her head or, like, the different aspects of her personality or, you know, something that was done to her brain, because I'm like, this isn't just you. This isn't. Like, it can't be. It doesn't seem right.
I thought it was interesting, but I agree that I don't think it was necessarily her, per se, because the way she handled it and how she had so much knowledge, and she is resourceful, and, you know, we've seen her that come out of her lots of different times, but this was just a whole different level of, you know, taking command, being very, you know, firm and very thorough with everything she wanted done. So I think that's a whole lot different. Even her shooting the weapon, because in the first scene, the guy that's playing the bait is actually supposed to be the best shot. So why is he the one playing the bait and Clara the one shooting the weapon? And then we go to like four scenes later and she's like, okay, who's the best shot? You're going to be in charge of the weapon. And so she gives it to the guy that was the bait for her to shoot the weapon, which didn't really make any sense. Why would he be the one shooting in the first place? Why would she be the first one to kill the Cybermen with that special gun?
It's definitely, it feels like she's done it before. I think in regards to the prequel and all the theories revolving around that, I feel like maybe it might have something to do with who she is and why she says she was born to save the Doctor. I feel like they're linked with her military knowledge.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, too. If you think about Cold War, she's, you know, with trepidation goes to confront the alien. And at the end, she's like, I was okay, wasn't I? I was okay. Like, there was a certain level of being unsure. But, I mean, now we have this, she is so sure of everything she's doing. There's not an element of doubt, and not that the stakes aren't incredibly high, because obviously it's the two kids. But I'm like, really? There's like no level of uncertainty or doubt or anything.
I think it's bad writing, or like people who've written the different episodes not comparing their continuity.
Yeah, that's really what I feel like. Again, yeah, like Gaiman got, like, this is who she is, you know, made an assumption of how this character has been developed, because obviously he doesn't know. He, at the time he had to write this, no one had seen Jenna Louise Coleman in anything, so he had to go by what he was told, and I just don't think Neil got the right level of information. The other thing we have here, too, is we have Warwick Davis, who is an old-time Doctor Who fan. Warwick Davis grew up loving the Doctor. I read online he was saying that his Doctor, quote-unquote, would have been Tom Baker, and that as a kid, he played dress-up as the Doctor, grabbing a screwdriver and hopping into a closet and pretending it was his TARDIS. So he was all sorts of psyched to be in an episode of Doctor Who. For those people who don't know, Warwick Davis has been in a ton of sci-fi and fantasy things, from Harry Potter to Willow to, I mean, you name it. He's done them all. Star Wars, he was the Ewok in Star Wars. I loved seeing Warwick Davis in this as a quote-unquote real person without being buried under gobs of makeup.
Heck yeah.
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 Like a wonderful opportunity to see what an amazing actor Warwick Davis was. And I just, my eye went to him every scene.
I actually, stereotypical me thought he was actually really attractive-ish. Like, I was surprised by how attractive I thought he was. I was like, oh, you're not a goblin. You're actually kind of pretty. Like, he had really nice eyes, and I was just like, yeah. It was really refreshing to see him as a human being, and he was fantastic, especially when he was, like, proposing to Clara, and that whole scene, yeah. I was just like, oh my goodness, this whole thing is amazing. Yeah. He's so good.
Yeah, it was just basically a random role that could have been played by anyone, and they had one reference that they made the statue a bit taller than he is in real life, if you know what I mean, and that was it, and it was just happened to be the character that he was playing, and he did such a good job. Like, he is a really good actor that's, you know, not just acting for a funny part that requires someone of a certain size or a certain skill, just, you know, like proper character acting. He did an amazing job.
Is anyone else upset with the fact that it was Angie who found out that he was the
thing, like, and not Clara or the Doctor? Smartness and credit.
Yeah. And actually, it was funny. I went back and I rewound, obviously, and I paused it, like, looking at the statue. And I got to tell you, I swear to God, really, it doesn't look to me a bit like Warwick Davis.
No, it doesn't.
No, I agree, because I look too. But she's holding up the coin as well to compare the coin to the statue and everything. So that's how she put it together. But yeah, no, I agree. When I looked at it, I was like, I'm not seeing it at all, actually.
Captain, I don't even know if she had a name besides Captain, but I really liked their interaction when she sort of realized, obviously recognized him, and then their private conversation.
Yeah, Tasman Althwaite is the person who played the army commander, the captain, and you're right, I don't believe we did get her name. I thought she was pretty good as the captain of this, you know, ragtag bunch of losers that have been sent out here as punishment because they haven't one way or another failed in their duty. It was actually kind of funny. It was just such a great, like, unit. Like, at one point, I'm like, is that Fred Weasley underneath goggles? I mean, it was sort of a combo between, like, him and Where's Waldo? And then one of the guys in the helmet looked a little bit like Craig. I mean, it was this whole ragtag group she was leading. But I did like
her. Oh, yeah. You said about the guy looking like Craig. When I was watching it with my friend, she was like, hello, fake James Corden, to that guy. Like, it was really, because he did look a lot like James Corden.
Yeah, I mean, I did like her as the leader. I thought she was pretty good. And then they, you know, they sort of just blow her up there before she can blow up the entire planet, which actually brings us to a next point. This is sort of interesting, because we've always had this thing with the Doctor and genocide and knocking people out, and I'm interesting. I know, Kyle, you kind of raised this. Would the Doctor have been okay with this planet being completely blown up? What do you think about it? Why don't you explain your thoughts on this?
It was just really interesting, because the only other time that I remember, I'm not the best at remembering everything, but the only other time I remember him blowing up a planet was with the Asylum of the Daleks. And that was more understandable, because they're Daleks, and they're not any sort of human beings at all. And with this, you still have the possibility of troops being on the planet and of Cybermen still being upgraded. And it's just like, well, I don't know how comfortable I am with the Doctor just being okay having them escape. And who escaped? Was it? It wasn't the entire troop, was it? It was just the people in that room is what it looked like. So he basically let everyone else die and saved everyone in the room. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting to see how it panned out. I mean, I will say this. With the Asylum of the Daleks, it wasn't so much that he was doing the blowing up. It was the Daleks were blowing it up, and he wasn't in a position to stop them. He did his best to get himself, Amy, and Rory, and he would have gotten Clara out of there until he realized she was a Dalek.
I thought they kind of zoomed up everyone who was still on the planet, but that there wasn't very many.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you're right, though. I do agree that probably was who was there, but I feel like he would have checked more. I can totally see where you're coming from, Kyle, on this level. I get exactly where you're coming from. And I think it also does lead a little bit into Cold War, too, when I was just like, the Doctor's going to blow the sub up and everybody on it, really? Yeah, it doesn't usually sit with what we see as his normal stance on things. And it's interesting too, because one of our readers in our mailbag this week has a similar comment, which we'll definitely get to. Why don't we move on to our Doctor and Clara relationship, which seems like we are perpetually, like, all year we've just been kind of stuck. Like, we got the idea of her being the impossible girl, the only mystery worth solving, and I just feel like we haven't gone forward with this at all since maybe the second or third episode. The episode where was it Rings of Akhaten, where we see her looking at her mom's grave? So I felt like we got a little bit of a solve of the mystery there. But other than that, have we just like not gotten anything more with it? Like, there's nothing else in Clara's backstory, anything to give us a little bit of a hint of anything. So
yeah, nothing that we're being told specifically. The only thing I can think or excuse I can make would be that we're meant to be picking up on these hints, like her adapting to this military situation and all of these kind of things, that we're meant to be picking up on these very subtle hints that she is doing something not normal, but definitely no actual development.
Yeah. I feel like the normal watcher would be like, okay, so I don't understand. Like, like, what is this mystery? Because he brings it up rarely, and just enough that it's always in the back of your head, but it's also not enough to satisfy you in any sort of way. And even if, like, I get it, like, he's waiting to, like, do the big reveal, which makes sense. But, like, every single episode that the mystery is mentioned, he brings it to you, and then he takes it away. He, like, the Doctor, or the Cyber Planner, or whatever, talked to Clara about being the Impossible Girl. And she was like, why am I the Impossible Girl? And she briefly talks to the Doctor about it, and then in the TARDIS, she's like, okay, bye, see you next Wednesday. And I'm like, wait, I don't understand. You're not going to ask him about the Impossible Girl? I mean, this is the perfect time. It's these reasons that I'm, like, expecting all these things to happen, and I'm not getting them in any way, and that's why I really did not like this episode.
But I don't think it's the episode's fault. I think it's the overall story arc of Clara. Like, it's every episode that we have really nothing to go on. Nothing more is explained. There aren't even any, like, hints or anything we can pick up and kind of take apart and try to figure out. There's not a lot. It's just, you know, she's the Impossible Girl. Even last episode where they were back in Victorian England with Jenny and Vostra and everyone, nothing really came of that either, which is just so strange.
Yeah, it was a doctor going, pause, like it, complicated, like, okay.
Yeah, but, like, give me something, anything, and there's not. So her story arc has kind of stalled out, and that's what makes, I think, every episode kind of like, eh, because we're not learning anything. In the past, even when Amy pregnancy thing, every episode we got something different, something questionable that would make you think and search, and but there's nothing. There's nothing at all, unless we're all missing it.
It's a lot of tell me instead of show me. Like, it's a lot of, let's just keep repeating she's the Impossible Girl and not give me a hint of anything else. Like I said, I think the last time we really got something was her, that whole sequence where the Doctor looks back on her backstory and everything. That's the last bit that we got anything of substance on her, which just, you need, as you said, Jen, I think the Amy comparison is a perfect comparison with the pregnancy, as we kept getting hints all the way through, which made it interesting rather than just getting the same phrase thrown at us. And again, I feel like Neil Gaiman got stuck here. he didn't know what had been or had not been developed. I hardly think it's Neil Gaiman's fault that, you know, she just, you know, struts out the door and, you know, next Wednesday and all that, because he doesn't know how this has been developed or not developed over the season. He kind of got stuck with what he got stuck with, which is kind of unfair to somebody like Neil Gaiman.
What Jen said, I think, is right as well, in the sense of that's why it has this run of episodes since Christmas has not been like that. We've just been like, huh, every episode, like, oh, this was not as beautiful and groundbreaking and, you know, thrilling as Doctor Who usually is. Because, yeah, we're not unraveling a mystery as we go. And aside from that, there haven't been any truly beautiful one-off episodes that might not have to do with the mystery but are, like, stunning.
You nailed it on the head with, like, there's no wow factor in any of these episodes. They're fun to watch, and they're great journeys, and they're really fun, like, expeditions with the Doctor, but not a single one of them, at the end of the episode, you go, oh my god. Like, it's weird. You're gonna have at least one episode that has, like, this huge cliffhanger thing, and it leaves you at the edge of your seat waiting for next week. And, like, we almost got that last week, and then nothing.
You know, as you're saying, those little cookies, those little nuggets, like, you just want more. I mean, the only things that we're starting to pick up on are some tangential things, which I think only the most diehard of viewers are going to watch. Like, we keep noticing the roses popping up every single week. This week
it was on her dress.
You know, so, but here's the thing, the things that I think Jen pointed out before, like those Amy tidbits, it's not just the diehard viewer that was going to see that. The casual viewer was going to see that too and be drawn into it. Here, I think with the bits of, you know, the red that seems to keep popping up everywhere, the roses that keep popping up, and then, you know, I don't think your casual viewer is going to pick that up. I mean, there are references to the 11th. All right, so maybe they'll pick that up. But other than that, I don't understand what people would have been meant to pick up. And then, as you said, Kyle, get that cliffhanger-ish, like, oh, what's happening next? Like, you're not getting that build-up.
Okay, so Rose Tyler did end up being a love interest of the Doctor. And Martha wanted to be, and obviously Donna wasn't, and Amy kind of wasn't, obviously, either. But every other one of those people has had, like, Rose started out with a boyfriend, with Mickey, and then there was a whole conflict. Martha kind of got a boyfriend. Donna, obviously, was having her wedding. And not that her, and obviously Amy and Rory is the most important couple that we've had on the show. Not that it's the be-all and end-all to have a boyfriend, but the fact that Clara doesn't have any love interest outside of the Doctor whatsoever makes me very nervous.
Yeah, there's no background. Other than having seen her father, whose name we do not know, we don't have anything else, you're right, on Clara's backstory, other than she was traveling, she knew the mom and the family, she was staying, and then the mom died and she stayed on. You're right, every other companion, we knew details about their family life, not beyond just love interest. We knew about Jackie's relationship with Rose. We knew how much Martha's brother and sister and the parents' breakup in marriage meant to her. We knew Donna's contentious relationship with her family. With Amy, we knew that she was being raised by the aunt after the parents died, and then, you know, the resetting and what have you, and then really Rory coming in very much as the foundation there. So you're right, we don't have anything on Clara.
It also makes me worry that she doesn't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I mean, you know, Oswin had a, you know, Nina, and then I guess the Victorian Clara, I think the employer of her children was a bit in love with her, but it didn't go anywhere, obviously, because she died. But it makes me worry more that it could go to, like, a Doctor love interest place because she doesn't have anything else to fall back on, if you know what I mean. Like, that she doesn't have, you know, Amy and Rory obviously never went there, even though Amy got a bit infatuated at first. And then, I mean, we're going to get to the bit in the, we can talk about this more in the prequel, because some of the stuff that both of them say in that little prequel that we just watched again was just like, oh, all right, like, this is all a bit intense. And I was just really not interested in Clara as a love interest. I really liked their chemistry at first. I loved her in Asylum of the Daleks, and I loved the Christmas episode, and everything seems a bit too perfect with them. Like, and everything seems a bit, you know, they have this like bond and they have this unspoken understanding that, as we've said, where apparently the Doctor doesn't have to explain things to her, as opposed to other companions where he kind of has to, you know, they know that they kind of don't know what's going on. And these two are just this magical bond together, and without any, as I said last week, they've got this closeness that we haven't really seen develop. It's just every episode we just see them there being perfect together, and we haven't seen that grow, and I'm not that into it. So I'm a bit worried that the fact that she doesn't have a boyfriend or whatever means that, you know, it could go to a place with her and the Doctor that I'm not really interested in it going to.
I feel like that all has stuff to do with the mystery of Clara, though. That's why we don't have any of it, is because all of it has to do with who Clara is, which just, we know nothing about that. We have this one version of Clara, and we've seen the other two versions, and we had no backstory on any of those versions either. So I think that's what we're looking at, is we're just looking at these individual blocks of this girl that we don't know anything about, really. We know she had a mom and a dad. We know how the mom and dad met. We know, you know, her mom made this reference to the stars all the time. And other than that, we don't really know anything about her. And because of that, we don't know anything about her relationship with the Doctor or how that all works out, because there's nothing about Clara that we know. So it's like the void is around Clara and what we know about her, so therefore it spreads to everything else.
The whole idea about the prequel that just came out, right at the end of the episode, the he said, she said thing. Did you guys get a chance to watch He Said, She Said?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the he said, she said. So, all right, they come up with this little soliloquy where they each, you know, reveal their innermost thoughts. And Clara makes it pretty clear that she is in love with the Doctor and she fights that urge every day. At least that's how I interpreted it, right?
Yeah, I mean, she says never fall in love, and I don't know if she meant with the lifestyle or with him, but she stops herself several times a day, and I'm just like, not here for this. Please, no. Like, please.
Right.
Is this what we have to do? All right. No.
Versus his side of it is he goes at it, and he starts, and I think, Jen, you picked up on it, you know, citing all the things that have happened, and you're everything to me. You're too perfect. And I think that's where he's at. So I feel like this love interest thing is a road, but the Doctor has been, they've both been resisting it, and for different reasons. And you could even see that with the Cybermen episode too, where they have that kind of confrontational thing and the Cybermen version starts hitting on her and she slaps him. Even if it is an urge they each feel, they are both covering it up. They're both hiding it completely. I think more so than the Rose and Ten situation, where you could see there were little glimmers of it and they weren't trying to hide it so much. These two, I think, are burying every instinct, but for different reasons. Did you guys get that same kind of vibe off the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's really accurate.
I have a crack theory, but I know you have a separate point for crack theories. You said, like, we have, after our spoilers, are we going to talk about our crack theories?
You know what? Yeah. Although, because we are running a little long, I was just thinking of ditching the spoilers until, like, after, like, just because there'll be more spoilers that are coming up. We can wait for spoilers until later on. So, yeah, why don't we get into some crack theories now? Because I honestly, and the big news is Matt cut his hair, so who cares? We can cut that and we can cut the spoilers. So why don't we go for the crack theory? I don't think it's bad to go there.
Okay, so I have two, actually. One about Matt cutting his hair. I feel like I don't think any Doctor has ever changed his appearance in the middle of, like, his run on the show. And I feel like having to have a wig is going to look not great, possibly. So one, my stupid crack theory is that people are probably going to, like, hate me for, so feel free, kyle@hypeable.com. But what if he regenerates at some point in the finale? Like, I don't understand why he would shave his head if he wasn't done with Doctor Who.
Well, I think he is done in the sense that they already filmed the 50th. I mean, they are kind of wrapped filming the 50th.
Yeah.
It's just, it's pickup shots.
Back,
yeah.
By the time that
could he grow back that long?
Yeah,
though?
They could.
No, they're going to wig him. I'm sure they're going to wig him.
It'll take like a year maybe for it to grow back to that length, probably. But something about the preview for the finale made me think he's done as well. I don't know what it was, but just made me feel he was done.
Yeah, right now the only thing they have
been hiding it.
Yeah, the only thing they have to film right now is the Christmas episode, because they've filmed everything in regards to the 50th, unless there are pickup shots, which means like something went wrong and they have to refilm, which that's going to be a pain in the butt if they have to redo that to put him in a wig.
And they
don't have a good history of wigs looking good. Karen Gillan is wearing this god awful wig in the Pond Life videos because she had her hair cut for that other TV movie, and you can just, it screams bad ginger wig. So I really hope they have somebody with a better wig for Matt, or they throw a fez on him or a funky hat or something, because they're going to need it if they do extra shots.
My second theory is that Clara is from Gallifrey, which goes to the point as to why they're both attracted to each other for some reason, and why, like, I know I said this a couple of episodes ago about how the Doctor is just attracted to Clara and he doesn't know why. There's just like this force pulling him towards her, and I feel like it's because she's Gallifreyan somehow, some way. Maybe.
There's definitely a lot of people that do feel like that a little bit, that she is from Gallifrey, and there is some evidence to suggest that she can time travel, particularly when you look at the promos for next week's episode. There's this montage, and it's voiced with Clara saying, "I was born to save the Doctor," and I'm like, really? That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And you see her, like, there are clips of other timelines in the Doctor. Like, there's a version of this car that the Doctor had at one point, and she's like in a 70s version of Clara, where she really would have been Sarah Jane, and it's very confusing. So, yeah, maybe there is something to that. That's certainly a good crack theory. Jen, you had something?
Well, yeah. This is my crack theory, is that somehow River has created Clara to protect the Doctor, knowing that she wouldn't always be there
as well
to do it, because she knows where her end is. She knows where she dies. So River had to do something, and there was all that time she was away from him, and she was doing her, you know, different doctor-like things. So what if she somehow created Clara in all versions, because she can time travel. So she found a Clara in every version of the Doctor to protect him and to save him. And she created Clara because she couldn't be there, because she does have these elements of River.
I wonder if Clara made her. Yeah, that if River made.
And she kind of cloned her and just kept her around when the Doctor would need her. And this is the first time the Doctor's really crossed her, because it's the first time he's been alone in so long. But knowing what was going to happen with Amy and Rory, knowing, because River always knew that she was Amy's daughter, or for the most part knew. She knew what her place was in the Doctor's world, and she knew where it ended. And she knew all of that together would be really, really hard on the Doctor. So the only way to protect him from himself, essentially, was to give him something to ponder over, to be fascinated by, someone who could keep up with him and keep him in place like she did, but also just be there for him. And so she gave him Clara.
Because he says in that prequel that, you know, she's perfect for me, like, and then she's kind of like too perfect and all of that. And I feel like that she's not, yeah, that she's not real, quote unquote real, not natural. And yeah, I did start to think that River definitely would know what, either River would know what was going on, or that somehow in some way that she was a strange manifestation out of the Doctor's own head. Though, I mean, we know she exists in the real world. I mean, presumably that the Doctor just hasn't been hallucinating this whole season, but that she is definitely something that unnatural that was sort of pulled out of the Doctor's own head and, you know, tailor-made to his need, you know, like, oh, everyone always leaves me and this one won't. But obviously he doesn't consciously know that. But the idea of River making her for him is definitely makes sense. You know, someone who will, you know, always come back even if she dies, and someone that will be able to keep up with him, someone that can adapt, that she kind of took aspects of all of his favorite companions and made, I don't know. I like Laura's. I like Jen's theory. Yeah.
My crack theory is that she is the great granddaughter or daughter, or not daughter, but great granddaughter, or it has to be removed a couple generations, of Rose Tyler and the Ten Clone, that somehow has managed to come
like
to
that.
has somehow managed to come to this world, passing through the void, and in passing through the void with her mom, like her mom is there. Like it's really that her mom has passed through the void, met the dad. So she reads as totally human. Cause I think that's the key part here is that she has to read as totally human. But because Rose Tyler looked into the heart of the TARDIS all those years ago, that there's some connection to the TARDIS in the past lives. And it is somehow wrapped into her DNA, and that this ability to hop times, but perhaps be another person or to see through the eyes of another person, is something to do with the interaction that Rose Tyler had with the TARDIS. So that's my crack theory, is I just feel like we have way too many Rose references here for her not to be connected to Rose and
Ten. That's true. I actually never thought of like the Roses in relation to Rose.
It also, the love interest is not nearly as creepy that way either. Like I've heard a couple of crack theories where people are like, oh, she's really Susan, or oh, she's really Jenny, and I'm like, really incestuous and creepy much? You really think Doctor Who's gonna go there? As I forget who said this, but somebody said this is not the CW, and I'm like, oh my god, that's such a true comment.
So
that's my crack theory, is that she is an heir, I should say, of Rose and Ten.
If Rose made her, do you think it would be, like, on purpose? Like, I mean, obviously it's her great-great-granddaughter, not just, oh, I made you. But, like, do you think Rose would have sort of sent her to the doctor in some way on purpose?
It's out of their control. I think it's out of their control is what I do. And that it's in some fashion, you know, their descendants have come back to our timeline from either the machinations of, say, the great intelligence, or somebody else messing around, that someone who was in, you know, quote unquote, Pete's world, you know, managed to cross over and come through. Because we've definitely seen those cracks in the universes that you could cross over. So for some reason, somebody fell through the crack. And when they fell through to the 1960s, you know, which is when her mom was born. So, like I said, maybe it's several generations down. That's where I'm going with it.
Any thoughts on that she might be like a bad guy? Like not that she knows she's a bad guy, but that she might have been made by a bad guy and like put with the doctor, you know, as a sort of weapon.
You mean kind of like River was?
I do see that,
River was, but River wasn't ever like traveling. I don't think River was ever traveling with the doctor. Like,
no, she was sent out to kill the doctor, but I mean, she was still made an instrument of bad.
Yeah, that's true. And in this case, I would be thinking more like, you know, that someone like the great intelligence, you know,
I do see, I do see the great intelligence at work here. And the idea that the great intelligence seems to consistently prey upon the minds of troubled children and be with that person for decades. So I could see maybe the great intelligence playing in here, and maybe it is a voice in the back of her head, and now she has to go against what the voice in her head has been saying versus what she's observed from her own two eyes. So I could totally see the great intelligence playing in here. And clearly we do know that the great intelligence will be back next week in the finale, because we did see the image of Richard E. Grant there. So, and maybe that is another point that I have here too, that the great intelligence, it would have been nice to have seen more of the great intelligence coming through. Like we got the idea with the Amy and Rory arc that the Silence were consistently around and the eye patch lady was consistently around. We have not gotten the consistent idea of the great intelligence being around other than the Bells of St. John. We have not consistently felt like they've been around. And I think that's something that could have been better done too.
Yeah. Just quickly going back to Tarek's theory about Matt being done. There was also a comment he made in this episode about, well, you know, if I regenerated right now, who knows what would happen? And this whole kind of, he had that dialogue in the middle. It just popped into my head. Sorry. So that kind of supports what that thought of Matt being done, because there was that whole comment about, well, if he did it right now, what would happen? Who knows what would happen? And this whole idea of what would come next. So I think that's really interesting, and that it kind of maybe lends itself to supporting that theory.
Imagine if they've secretly finished and hired someone without anyone. Because we knew when David Tennant was finishing, we knew that he was going to be finishing, right? Like, it wasn't like a surprise.
Yeah, right. Like, unless it's a total lie. Because, like, we know that, well, here's the thing. We do know that Jenna Louise Coleman has been renewed 100% for going beyond into 2014. And fairly recently, Matt Smith said, yes, I am renewing for 2014 also, unless this is complete BS. And we watched Regeneration at Christmas. No, he did. Originally he hadn't said anything, and then he did say yes. But maybe it's all a ruse. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have not yet filmed the Christmas episode, so we don't know what may be going on there. So it's certainly an interesting thing, and I think pretty much guarantee that we're not going to get. We're not going to get new episodes until like fairly later on in 2014. You know, if you just want to talk like filming timeline and all that, it'll be very late in 2014. We get episodes.
Isn't it hilarious that BBC shows just go on when they go on, like as opposed to the American TV cycle, which has like a strict like. Imagine if The Big Bang Theory or like Once Upon a Time was just like, oh yeah, we're just going to air
whenever the hell we feel like it. Yeah.
And then, there won't be any for like another couple of years, but then our season will come back. If you, like Sherlock taking like 3 years to do its next season or whatever. Like, it's so funny to me that the BBC can just do that and that people are like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like whenever it'll get viewers when it comes on. So whatever, like imagine if Once Upon a Time was like, oh, well, we're not going to do our season now, but we're going to do it like 6 months later. Is that okay? And the network would be like, no, you're canceled. You know, like,
well,
it's really
you
funny
know what
to
it
me.
Is that the BBC essentially has no incentive or next to no incentive to quote unquote be good or be market conscious because they're basically funded through the British government, through the TV licensing.
TV licenses.
The tax that they raise versus, say, American TV, or I don't quite know how it works in Australia, you know, our TV is all based upon advertising and demographics and how popular you are, and you have to appeal or you don't get the advertisers, and then obviously you don't get the money. Versus British TV, where the government is funding all of it. It's somewhat similar to PBS in the U.S., but PBS even is only partially governmentally funded, and then after that they have to fundraise, and they have to put on programming that people want to see when they want to see it, or they're not going to donate. Yeah. So I feel like the BBC is like, you know, we can do whatever the hell we want because, you know, we're always going to be here. We're going to be on whatever schedule we want. And that's what gives them license to cancel things like Doctor Who Confidential or to air things in loopy orders or loopy times. I mean, you know, in America, Doctor Who is consistently on Saturday nights at the same time all the time. Versus in the UK, it's hilarious. I mean, Kyle, you and I were talking about this the other day, going, well, some days it's on at 7, some days it's on at 6:15, some days it's on at 5. Like, it's not even airing the same time when it is on for, you know, a 7-week stretch. So it's a very different system versus, say, something like ITV, which is the other big channel over there in the UK, is very consistent as to when things air, how they're going to do it. They're much more, and I think they're also much more PR friendly in getting out their word. So
I love it. Like, I really love that aspect of like the British media and like the BBC culture and everything about that. They are much more. I think it gives people the ability to be a lot more creative because they're not just pandering to certain audiences or you know advertising and things like that. I love the way the British industry runs compared to the Hollywood industry anyway. But yeah, it's just really funny to me that they can just bring their season back on whenever and, you know, people will watch when it comes back. It doesn't matter when it is.
Right. Okay.
No, I just gotta head out to work.
Okay.
Yay. So it was fun chatting.
Chatting, that's a new word.
And I will see y'all next week. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Which, actually, before you go, quick, Kyle, let me just slip in one thing before we get to our mailbag. Next week, we're going to do this with a Google Hangout, guys. So we'd love you to come and Google Hangout with us after the East Coast airing of Doctor Who. We'll also record it and put it up as a podcast. Also, you could catch it on YouTube later on. But definitely, if you guys want to come and chat live with us right after the episode is done, we would love to have you all. So put out some more details on that later this week.
Yeah, right after BBC America's episode's done, not the UK.
Right. Yeah. After the BBC America East Coast airing, right, which will give us enough time for the Brits, the East Coast and Central Time US to get in on it. I know West Coast, I'm sorry, but trying to get the most in as we possibly could. So, great. All right. Have fun at work there, Kyle.
Bye, guys.
So before we get into our mailbag here, we do have one extra thing we want to do. We talked about this a little bit last week. We have a giveaway from Mr. Neil Gaiman, who we are so appreciative that he took the time to sign something for us. And Natalie, why don't you talk a little bit about what it is that we have from Neil?
Yep. So what we have to do a giveaway of is a sealed box set of an Idris doll, his character from the episode The Doctor's Wife, the TARDIS in her human form, that is played by Saran Jones. And we have one of those to give away, and it's a doll contained in the box, and the box has been signed by Neil in silver pen. It's all very nice, and we have got that to enter basically any listener worldwide. It's at my house in Australia, so I'll ship it wherever it, you know, for whoever is entering worldwide. We're going to do a raffle copter giveaway. The details will be in the show notes, the post on hyperball.com, so you can enter to win that giveaway from, you know, Doctor Who, Neil Gaiman artifact. Yeah, that should be cool. Unfortunately, we don't have something relating to Nightmare in Silver, but that has only just aired today, but, you know, yesterday. So that is what we have for you in conjunction to this year's Neil Gaiman episode. So hopefully someone out there who's a Neil Gaiman Doctor Who fan will enjoy that.
Awesome. So as Natalie said, definitely look for it on the show notes, and we'll put up a post on Hyperball for it as well. And as we said, folks, I know sometimes people get upset when we can't do things internationally, and usually that's because the vendor themselves controls where the item goes. But since we have possession of this, we can ship this anywhere. If you're out in Antarctica, I suppose, on a research base, we'll ship it there. But regardless, it'll go to wherever you are. So that is quite something good. Okay, so moving on to our mail section, we have two. Jen, do you want to take the first one?
Sure. The first note is from Joshua. It says, last episode, y'all seemed kind of confused about the plot specifics of the Crimson Horror. You weren't the only ones, but on second viewing, I don't think the parasite creature had anything to do with the plan and was just a tool for Mrs. Gillyflower. This frankly upset me when Ada killed it. While I understand lashing out when you're angry, all I could think about was the Adipose episode from Series 4, when Donna asks if the Doctor is going to blow up the Adipose, and he says, they're just children, they can't help where they came from. I feel like this creature, whatever it may have contributed to the horrible things that happened, wasn't malicious and simply acting on its nature. So I expected the Doctor to scold her for that, much in the way he did Harriet Jones, and it really bothered me that he didn't, and that he wouldn't, and that he would let that go. Other than that, I love the vintage film flashback, the Doctor dodging questions about Clara, and of course the antics of the Victorian trio, who at some point do need to run into the freshly assembled Torchwood. Though the best was, I am the boss line. So I guess that leads us back to kind of the things we've been saying about the Doctor being willing to blow up an entire planet or blow up a submarine and be more destructive than he typically is. This is kind of a new side of the Doctor we're seeing. And I think that's a valid point about how he wouldn't kill things before, and how he willingly kind of, not, I mean, she did it before he could stop her, but at the same time, he didn't scold her like he has.
He was
in
like,
the past.
Oh well, like, kind of thing. Yeah. I thought he was going to like take it somewhere. And I think I agree with this person in that I think that it was not conscious. Like, I don't think it was like giving the woman ideas or like plotting with her. I think it was just a worm, you know?
Yeah, I also like what the point they bring up with about being upset that Ada just killed it. I think that's a great point. I think that she just did it so fast. I don't think he realized what was happening. And then it was just like, and now I can't do anything about it. But I agree. There is sort of a discontinuity about the doctor not saying, you know, you should have let it live. But then so many horrible things happened to Ada anyway. So I can see both sides of it. But I do think you have a fair point about the doctor not maybe trying to do more with the little parasite. I don't know. Put it in a jar or something. I don't know. But I get the point. So, Natalie, do you want to take the next one, which is from Claire?
Okay, so the next mailbag is from Claire. And it says, I'm a big fan of old-time classic horror, and Mr. Gatiss seems to really capture the feel of old films I remember from my youth very well, The Wolfman or even a lot of Vincent Price's films. Nice and scary and creepy, but without people chasing each other around with chainsaws. I think maybe the reason he had the Doctor and Clara so much closer in this episode was that the Doctor had the realization last episode that Clara was not pretending to forget to have lived before, that she's honestly just a girl who happens to have the same name and likeness as the last two Claras he's met, at least as far as she's concerned. So now he can relax and have more fun with her, or at least that's how I took it. Thought I'd share an observation my 11-year-old made today that I thought was amusing. We went to see Iron Man 3 today. Don't read if you don't want a minor plot spoiler for Iron Man 3. Anyway, there are bad guys in it who happen to glow red. So we're walking out of the theater and she turns to me and says, Mom, it's the Crimson Horror all over again. Tony and Pepper needed the Doctor and Clara. So that was from Claire. I think that's quite interesting in terms of Clara and the Doctor's relationship. I never really thought about that in that maybe he was, you know, I never thought that he thought that she was lying, if you know what I mean, that she was covering up. But he did get to that point of snapping. I mean, she ended up forgetting it all because they had that whole reboot thing. But of snapping, being like, who are you? Why, you know, what's going on? You know, if she was, you know, having this crafty cover up of her life. And I suppose that's something he might have suspected about her. I never really realized that he was suspecting that about her. Do you think that he was?
I think he was just, she's just, as she says, the constant puzzle, the constant, the impossible girl, that he's just constantly questioning every single thing about her, but we only get it on that sort of surface level. It's interesting, as this comes up, I sort of had something else go through my head about, you know, good old wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, and maybe the thing is that Clara is completely normal, completely everything. She's, the fact that she is who she is up until this maybe last episode, does she, I mean, in the prequel, we kind of see this segment where River is looking at, I guess, an exposed element of the TARDIS. I assumed it was the heart of the TARDIS or part of the time vortex. And it looks like Clara may or may not be willing to jump into it. Maybe we've all been overanalyzing it, that she is absolutely Clara until this very last episode where she decides for the first time to sacrifice herself for the Doctor and somehow chucks herself into the time vortex. And then that is how she has scattered her different versions all over the place. And that's how she is who she is. I don't know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Maybe we've all been overanalyzing this.
I mean, I definitely think that we're going to see Clara sort of become, you know, that we're going to find the way that she's going to turn into Clara, if you know what I mean, that she's going to turn into the impossible girl. Like, she's not the impossible girl yet, but the Doctor knows she is, or that she's going to be.
Right, right. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this all wraps up. And then we've got, after this is done, we've got a really long wait, folks, because the next Doctor Who episode we're going to get is the 50th anniversary special, which will appear on the exact 50th anniversary itself, which is November the 23rd. And then after that, it's the Christmas episode. And then after that, just on logistics. Yeah, we're talking late 2014 at best. Just, there's no way to turn around the editing and timing otherwise. So this is going to be an interesting one, so to be seen. Okay, folks, so as we mentioned, next week is definitely going to be a Google Hangout. We'll put out some information about that shortly. So thank you so much for listening again. I know we have so many questions, and honestly, we just want to know who she is. We just want to know who Clara is. So until the next time, I'm Laura.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Natalie.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.